Hey, everybody, this is Brad Williams, and I am the pastor of B4 Church. Welcome to our podcast. My prayer is that this would help you behold God, that you would see Him for who He is, that you would belong to community, that you would be everything that you were created to be, and that you would be able to dream beyond the limitations in your life. So I hope you enjoy this teaching, and we look forward to seeing you in person soon.
Hey, everyone, welcome to the B4 Podcast. My name is Alex.
And I'm Ashley.
And today we are sharing with you part two of our conversation with Dr. Kara Powell.
Yeah, we had so much fun. We got her for an hour, so we figured you might not want to sit down for a whole hour. We'd split it up for you because we don't want to give you too much of a good thing.
Yeah, absolutely. Also, we needed more episodes. So.
makes life easier on us.
It makes life easier for us. In part two, we're going to dive deeper into those big three questions about purpose, belonging, and identity. Mm-hmm. And we know that every single human asks these questions at different points in their life. But one of the things we really talked about was how important these questions are to answer in your teenage and young adult years. So we're excited to hear more about the research that Dr. Kara Powell has conducted and the things that she has learned and her words of wisdom shared to our church.
Yeah. And if you haven't listened to the first episode, you probably will understand what you'll be able to, you know, jive with the conversation if you listen to it.
Sure.
But it might be helpful to go back and listen to the first one just so you know a little bit more about Kara and where she's coming from.
Absolutely. Well, buckle in. And excited for this conversation as well. I'm wanting to hear more about the three big questions.
Yes.
Again, I have like skin in the game from a pastoral level, but also just from a personal level.
Yeah.
I have, you know, young people in my life and I'm navigating some of these things with them.
Yeah.
And I have, I mean, the expert right here.
Quote expert.
The expert of all time on the three biggest questions any human will ever ask.
No. Sure.
Obviously, you've spent a lot of time diving into each of these, and I'm wondering if you could maybe help us further define each of these big questions so we know what we're talking about.
Yeah. Maybe what I can do is, if I can relate it to young people, how young people tend to currently answer those questions, and what we think is a better Jesus-centered answer to each of those questions.
Okay. See, expert.
You made Alex's disorganized question into a very organized answer.
Thank you.
And again, I just want to say what I said a few minutes ago, that we're all wrestling with these questions.
Yeah,
so young people are an interesting microcosm, but I'd encourage all of us to think about how we wrestle. And I'll share autobiographically, even when we start with identity.
Yeah.
So as we spent time with teenagers, the two major answers they tend to use currently when it comes to who am I is they tend to view themselves as kind of a compilation of what everybody else wants. Mm-hmm. They feel like they have all these audiences that they're trying to please. So they've got their family, sometimes nuclear and or extended. They've got church. They've got their coach. They've got teachers. They've got neighborhood. They've got their boss. And so they're constantly trying to be the person that these various audiences want.
They're like a chameleon.
Very much so.
Yeah.
Which is tied to the second common answer for identity right now. And this is, for me, even more heartbreaking, is they feel like they're not enough. Young people today feel like they're not enough. They're not smart enough. They're not popular enough. They're not talented enough. They don't have enough friends on social media, not enough likes, whatever it might be. And we also skewed our sample set to be particularly attentive to the needs and questions of young people of color.
Yeah.
And so this is an area where especially Latino and Black African-American young people often don't feel Latino enough or Black enough.
Wow.
So, you know, that's how young people are currently walking around. So what's then the Jesus-centered answer? We spent a lot of time and, you know, everybody needs to think about this for themselves and for the young people in their lives. But the way that we define the Jesus-centered answer is that Jesus makes us enough.
Yeah.
I am enough because of Jesus.
Yeah.
In fact, I'm more than enough because of Jesus.
Talk about good news, right?
Yeah.
Totally.
Talk about good news.
Yeah. And it's good news for me every day. Like, you know, like I said, I don't generally feel insecure so much at work, but as a parent, it is easy for me to feel inadequate and like I'm not handling things well and compare myself and so-and-so does such a better job and their kid is blah, 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 blah. And, you know, all this kind of garbage comparison stuff. And so, I mean, I pray about 10 prayers every day for myself. And one of them is that I will know that Jesus makes me enough.
Yeah.
Like I need to marinate in that. And so I definitely want young people to marinate in that and really all of us of all ages. So that's identity.
Yeah. Yeah.
Belonging. What was interesting about young people's current answers for belonging is They use the word safe so much. Yeah. I know I belong when I feel safe.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And sometimes they felt safe in family. Sometimes they felt safe with friends, sometimes at church. But they currently know they belong when they feel safe. The other thing, this was interesting, and I don't know why I didn't realize this before we did this study, is young people also feel like they belong if they've shared an experience or a preference with others. Mm-hmm. So I feel like I belong with the other kids who are in the AP chemistry class with me.
Because we both had to deal with that terrible teacher.
Exactly. We're on the same basketball team. We like the same music, et cetera. So the challenge there, I mean, those aren't terrible answers for belonging. They're not as inherently toxic as the answers for identity. But they miss out on the unconditional love that we want to be in Jesus-centered community. Yeah. So our Jesus-centered answer there, for identity, it's enough. For Jesus-centered belonging, it's with. Mm-hmm. That we belong with God's people.
Yeah.
God's designed us to live in community, and that includes community with God's people. And then lastly, quickly, purpose. One of the really main common answers for purpose right now is young people feel like they have purpose when they're serving others, which is great. Like this generation that wants to serve.
Right.
And when they live up to the expectations of others. So again, heavily influenced by others' expectations for grade, school, job, et cetera. Not terrible answers, but they're missing out on the deeper motivation. I think there's a lot of young people today serving because it's on the college application or serving because mom, dad, stepmom, stepdad, small group leader wants them to. And so the Jesus-centered answer we want for young people to embrace there is we serve because we're part of God's story.
Right.
Story being the word.
Yeah.
So enough with story. Yeah. That, you know, I got to speak at my daughter's baccalaureate in May. It was such a privilege. And one of my themes was, you know, God's writing a great big story. Figure out your page. And each of us have a page in God's story. And so, you know, adults can come alongside and help young people figure out what that page is.
So are these questions progressive in nature then?
Good question. Not necessarily.
Not necessarily.
So everybody's got an opinion on that, actually.
Okay.
So some of there's a school of psychology at Fuller, too. I'm a faculty member in the theology and mission school. But our school of psych faculty, some of them think that belonging is kind of the tip of the arrow that leads the way. If you look at data on just how important attachment is, even, you know, with children and infants. And so, you know, maybe belonging is kind of the tip of the arrow. I think with this generation, it might be purpose. Because this is a generation that wants to make a difference. Yeah. They're not satisfied just watching. They want to play.
Yeah.
They want to be on the field.
Right.
And so it could be purpose. But for others, like I said, for me, I'm more activated by identity than anything.
Yeah.
So that's one of the things we encourage people of all ages. Like, figure out which one leads the way for you as both an area where you're maybe more vulnerable, as well as an area where God speaks to you.
Yeah.
And, you know, let others know that so you can have conversations about it.
The reason why I asked you the question is I'm processing this in real time.
Yeah.
But when you started with identity, one of the ways you described it was, I'm with all of these different people.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to figure out who I am in the midst of all of these people and their expectations for me, which is interesting because that statement in and of itself means they're in groups of people.
Totally.
Right.
There's a disconnect between the people that I'm around and who am I really?
Yeah.
It's almost like one question that this is why I'm processing it has to come first. And then you talked about purpose and doing it for the wrong reasons. But if you don't get the identity piece right first, then you will do it for the wrong reasons.
Right, right.
But I don't know if they are that simple as step one, two, three, but they are so connected.
They're very connected.
Yeah.
So what psych people would call is they'd call them bidirectional relationships.
Okay.
So imagine a triangle and there's 3 points of the triangle. Of identity, belonging, purpose. And there's an arrow that's each of the leg of the triangle that's going both ways.
Yeah.
So there's, you know, arrow-y like ends on both ways.
Yeah.
So you're absolutely right. Identity affects belonging, belonging affects identity.
Yeah.
Identity affects purpose, you know, and purpose affects identity. They really do affect each other. But that's where it's important to know your own propensities.
Sure.
As well as the people who are closest to you.
Yeah.
So my husband... Yeah. You know, I'm a big identity person. My husband's a big purpose person.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So like when he hears about a tragedy in the world, like his default is I want to get a hammer and get an airplane and
go fix it.
Yeah, exactly. One of our kids is a huge belonging person. Mm-hmm. Like her life is relationships. Mm-hmm. And we know that mm-hmm. about her. And so it helps us know how to respond to her, yeah. how to make sure she yeah. gets what she needs most, as yeah. well as areas of vulnerability
yeah.
where she maybe gives out a little too much to her friends mm-hmm. and yeah. needs to be more
sure.
centered.
Sure.
So I think it's different for every person
yeah. Yeah.
and know what it is for you and the people closest to you.
Okay. That's really good.
Yeah. I like that. Because I think that applies, as you were saying, that's a thing that applies to adults as well, that you can see
totally.
Differences between yourself and your husband,
totally.
Your daughter. So being aware of those can help you function more
yeah.
healthily
yeah.
in the relationships around you.
It's kind of
well.
Enneagram-ish in that
yes,
way.
A little bit. Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
you know, when I understand that I'm a three, that helps
yeah.
me, which I am
sure.
like off the charts. I don't even think I have a wing. I know you're supposed to have a wing, but I don't even think
you're
I have a wing.
Three.
I'm just all three, head to toe.
Yeah.
And that helps me know. And, you
yeah.
know, my husband's a six and a two. And so that helps me know. So,
yeah.
so I think it just helps us understand ourselves.
Yeah. It's mm-hmm. a tool.
And
yeah.
other people
yeah.
who are close to us better.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Oh, I'm curious as someone, I am expecting my first child. So I'm clearly not raising teenagers. Thank
That's
you.
Awesome.
But reading your book, I was like, dang, like I would love to put some of this stuff into practice.
Yeah.
But currently, like, there isn't an area of my life where I'm working directly with teens.
Yeah.
So for other people who might be listening to all this and be like, wow, I wish I could help a teenager answer some of these three questions, but like without being a creeper
right.
and just finding the first teenager that
right.
I meet and asking them the 300 questions from the book,
right.
what does it look like to kind of start to foster some of those relationships to be able to actually speak into the lives of teens and young adults if that's something that we don't currently have?
Yeah, great question. So I think the Holy Spirit's always at work.
Yes.
And creating connections and sparks that we sometimes are aware of and sometimes aren't.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, this church is a fantastic church. It's a large church. And yes. it wouldn't surprise me if you often sit next to, let's say at worship service, a young person, or you're parked near a young person, or you just keep passing a young person in the hallway and there's just something about them.
Mm-hmm.
I would say if a parent's around, then start with the parent and say,
good
you
call.
Know, I just kind of feel this, I don't even say connection, but I would say something to the parent like, you know, I'd love to get to know your son or daughter a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
This church encourages intergenerational relationships.
Mm-hmm.
Can I introduce myself and just ask them how I can be praying for them? And I think that's actually a great first question.
Sure.
We're talking
mm-hmm.
a lot about
sure.
questions here. Like,
sure.
how can I be praying for you?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I was just talking to somebody at a church on in Tennessee, actually. And he said he has started, and his church has actually really created a program to help adults pray for young people.
That's awesome.
And he was saying that he's praying for the sixth grade boy. And this
so
sixth
cool.
grade boy, like, just comes up and stands near him.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
after church.
Yeah.
Doesn't even always
really
say anything.
Yeah,
yeah, totally.
I mean,
totally. He's just kind of fidgety near
yeah.
him.
Yeah.
And then he often leaves without even saying hi.
Yeah.
But
sixth grade boys are wont to do.
Yes.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
But Tony knows that the boy at least comes over to him
mm-hmm.
because the boy knows that he's praying for him.
Yeah.
So I think that's a great thing to ask
yeah.
a parent for permission. And if
yeah.
if there is no parent around, then go directly to the young person and say, hey, I've seen you.
Yeah.
Keep seeing you on Sunday mornings
yeah.
or Sunday nights, whenever it is. My name's so-and-so.
Yeah.
I'd love to just know how to be praying for you. And then, you know, we were talking earlier about looping back to people. And
mm-hmm.
so, you know, when you ask for that prayer request, then a week or two
sure.
later, how's it going?
How's it going?
How's
yeah.
it going with that big test you're worried about? How's
yeah.
it going with your busyness? I know you were feeling really stressed before. How's
yeah.
it going? And for the young person, it's like, wow, I feel hurt. In fact, one of my favorite sayings these days is by a colleague of mine, David Augsburger, who says, being heard is so close to being loved that for the average person, they are indistinguishable.
Wow.
Being heard is so close to being loved
yeah.
that they're really the same.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So really listening to a young person, looping back to them, I think that's a great first
yeah.
step. The other thing I would say is, I mean, I've met some of your amazing pastors here. Like,
yeah.
reach out to a
mm-hmm.
pastor, especially over that age group, and
mm-hmm.
say, gosh, I would just love to get a little more
yeah.
connected.
Mm-hmm.
Are there areas for me to mentor, to pray, to come and serve sandwiches,
yeah.
like whatever it might be? And
right.
so, you know, you all have an infrastructure here that can help facilitate
sure,
some
sure,
of those connections.
Sure. As you were sharing this, I was thinking about, why is this important?
Mm.
And I was reminded of your work with Sticky Faith.
Yeah.
There was something that you wrote about, which is not quite the silver bullet, but the closest possible thing to the silver bullet.
Totally.
I'm wondering if you could share a little bit about that and why this question is an important one for everyone in the church to answer, not just a staff.
Yeah. I'm a big fan of our Sticky Faith research, and it shaped decisions I made this weekend with our 10th grader. Mm-hmm. So I feel like every day Dave and I are thinking about things, talking about things differently because of our Sticky Faith research. But what really catalyzed the research is the best data shows about 40 to 50% of kids from great churches like this, great families, like we'll be listening to this podcast, end up drifting from the faith after they graduate. So what can we do as a church and as family members to help young people have a faith that lasts?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So we looked at 13 different youth group participation variables. Mm-hmm. So 13 things that kids tend to do in the context of youth group. And you'll be glad to know that worship was correlated with mature faith in both high school and college.
Good.
Serving and being involved in justice work was correlated with mature. Scripture was correlated with mature faith.
Good
things. So a lot of good things. A lot of good things. Yeah, exactly. It's like, yay, we're
no chubby bunny.
Somewhat on the right.
Yeah, no chubby bunny. Not on the list.
But of all 13 variables that we looked at, the one that was most correlated with mature faith was intergenerational relationships.
Yeah.
And that is what, especially at a large church like this one, and my church is a little bit smaller than this, but pretty comparable. It's easy to think, well, we've got the great pastors who are over young people.
Yeah.
And, you know, we've given them a good facility and they have great programs and all this. And we end up segregating them, which is not a verb I use lightly.
Sure.
We end up segregating them from the rest of the church. And so what we found is when we could, I mean, there's a time and a place for 16-year-olds to be talking about 16-year-old issues.
Right.
But when we can bring the generations together more, I mean, what's interesting is our data really focused on what that means for young people. But the secondary benefit is what that means for the rest of the church.
Yeah, exactly.
Like when we have young people and their innovation and their freshness and their creativity and their realness, like it just brings vitality to our lives and our faith and the church overall. So what's interesting is while our research is really primarily about how churches impact and shape young people, what we constantly find is the inverse of that is true too, that young people really shape churches. And so at a church this size, like we have to be extra diligent for those who are family members, aunts, uncles, grandparents, parents, of making sure that what we call, you create a five-person team or a 5-to-1 ratio. It's a term that my friend Chap Clark coined, this idea that, you know, a lot of times in youth ministries, we talk about we want one adult for every five kids. Well, let's reverse that and have five adults for each kid.
Yeah.
Not five Bible study leaders or small group leaders, but five adults who are praying for that kid, know that kid's name. And so so that's part of what shaped our weekend is I did a little bit of extra connecting so that our 10th grader could spend time with her small group leader this weekend.
Yeah.
So just an example of how I'm always trying to think, how do we create the web of relationships?
Yeah.
So I think a church like this, it has so much potential to offer those relationships, but a lot of obstacles because of the size.
Yeah.
And so that's where I think, and I mean, if you all, if there are particular ways that you would recommend adults get involved in intergenerational relationships, please feel free to do so even now.
Yeah. Well, so some of my thoughts on this are that in some ways it can be really complicated, but in other ways, it's actually not that complicated. It's showing up. Last weekend, I was teaching in our Sunday service, and their youth pastor came up to me and said, our high schoolers are in the room, and they're just before the service, and they're just not excited to be here.
That's
a great encouragement.
And then you're going to speak to them.
Cool. And he's like, they just kind of feel like we don't see them. And so it's interesting because I didn't really have to change much about my message.
Yeah.
But before we started, I just turned and looked at the group of them and said, I'm so glad you're here.
Nice.
And it meant the world. Again, I didn't change anything about it.
Nice.
And it wasn't that complicated to just say, I see you. When I was in your shoes, I was as confused as, you know, maybe some of you are. And I love you and I'm glad you're here.
Yeah.
And it was like, I know that was in a church setting, but what I've learned from outside of that is so often it's like you said, it's asking a question. Oh, I'm going to pray for you. Following up a week later. You know, so to demystify it a little bit, that's what I'm hearing you say. And it's just important we show up in other people's lives.
Totally.
Because we tend to make it institutionalized where we feel like there are these obstacles like, oh, in order for me to invest in the life of a teenager, I need to be able to commit every Tuesday night for the rest of my life to be a small group leader, which isn't actually true. Like I loved your suggestion of just asking, finding one student, how can I pray for you? Because it takes the process and the bureaucracy and all that can happen in a large church and just cuts it out of how do I get to a young person, even in a simple way, to make a difference in their life.
And then, you know, again, for those of us who are raising, whether it's children, elementary, teenagers, then the flip side becomes, okay, how do we make sure that we're creating this web? And so, you know, like I said, I asked, since I'm up here for the weekend and my husband's also out of town, we asked our daughter's small group leader to help with some of the driving that she needed. And I could have asked somebody else, but I'm like, no, I want to strengthen Jessica's time with Sam. And so, and Sam was happy to help. So you know, that's for us as a parent to think about, who are those adults where there seems to be a connection and how do we help turn the dial into more depth for those connections?
That's really good.
Can I just like give a public thank you?
Sure.
Because like I mentioned to you before, I have four younger brother-in-laws. And when one of them was 12, he came up to my wife, Fallon, and I at church with tears in his eyes, frustrated, because he said that the youth pastor only ever asks him what's going on in his life. Sorry. When he sees him, he only asks him why he hasn't been coming to youth. And he, with tears in his eyes, he said to us, now he's a big, strong football player, just graduated college. But with tears in his eyes said, I just want to know, why does he never show up at my games?
Wow.
And I was like, you get it better than those of us paid do.
Yeah.
But that question changed everything for me.
And why I bet you started going to games.
Well, I started coaching his teams.
Even better. Yeah. Oh, that's awesome.
It changed my philosophy about everything. Yeah. It was like, and it wasn't as complicated. Now my four younger brother-in-laws are 30 to 20 and they're like some of my dearest friends.
Yeah.
But I had to earn the right to be their big brother, you know? But so much of your research helped me figure out how to do this.
Yeah.
And really, like sometimes, like Ashley was saying, it's overly complicated.
Yeah.
And you allowed me to just understand that, you know, coaching their basketball team was just as much as volunteering in a youth group.
Yeah.
And so thank you personally.
Oh, wow.
And now I'm watching this with my daughters. Mm. My daughters have friends that are in their 20s.
Mm, that's awesome.
And people ask them all the time, what are you? Either babysitter or you? And they're like, no, they're my friends.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I'm watching it mean the world to them. One of them wanted to come today and just sit in the room in the corner because she wanted to see this group of people.
Awesome.
So I just want to say thank you that your research has begun to change the paradigm of not just how I see ministry, but I honestly, I'm watching it spread all over the place. And so I appreciate that. Also that it's from your life and that you're actually practicing this.
Yeah.
Always good to find people who practice what they preach.
Yeah, I think that's really important.
Not at all perfectly, but yes, we do. Well, Dave and I do try at least. So, well, that I mean, you've convicted me with that story about why don't they come to my games? And I think what's sometimes hard as an adult is sometimes you come to the game, and whether it's your younger brother-in-law or whether it's just a kid from the neighborhood or a kid from church, it doesn't seem like a big deal that you've come to the game. You know, the kid barely acknowledges you, maybe does a head nod, you know, a hey, an eyebrow raise. And that's the full greeting that you get from them. But it still means so
much.
Like it means more than their body language and what they say at that game might communicate. And so that's where just being faithful and being consistent and showing up at games. Creates such a bridge that makes a difference to a young person's life, like your brother-in-law. So,
Is there anything else that you would like to talk about that we haven't talked about? Anything that you'd like to say to our congregation or any places that you would like us to plug your website, other materials, that kind of thing? Open forum.
I'll just, the one thing that comes to mind. So I've been on your church campus for now an hour. Okay. So, and I've never been here before. So I'm by no means an expert, but there's a really positive vibe here. Like I'm seeing a lot of young people, people in their 20s and 30s. It just feels like there's a warmth here, which is fantastic. So I want to affirm what I feel here. And then the other thing is some new research just came out from Springtide looking at young people. Two bits of data. First of all, for young people overall, teenagers overall in the U.S., only 10% of teenagers overall heard from a religious leader during the pandemic. 10%. Now, that's all kids, not right. just church-attending kids or religious kids. It's all kids. Only 10%. I mean, that just gives a pit in my stomach mm-hmm. when I think about that. But I'm a good news person. Yeah. So here's the good news. 70% of kids in the same survey said they were more open to meaningful relationships after the pandemic. Mm. You know, that the pandemic, it shook us all. And I don't even know if we're really after the pandemic. I don't know how to talk about time.
It keeps getting extended.
Yeah. I don't know how to talk about time, but after the last 18 months, let's say that. Like kids, young people, teenagers, young adults, they're more open to relationship. Yeah. And so, you know, what I'm saying to churches now, including Beaverton, which just has such an awesome feel here, Beaverton Foursquare, like there's never been a better time to take a step toward a young person. So they're hungry for adult relationships. They've missed contact in the last 18 months. And it might feel awkward. I feel awkward sometimes around teenagers. Sure. And I've been doing youth ministry for 30 years. Like, it might feel awkward, but take baby step by baby step and be faithful. And you just never know what God's going to do. That's what I would want to say to your church.
Good. That's a good word.
That's really good. Well, thank you again for coming. We're so happy to have you on the podcast. Hopefully someday we'll have you back.
I would love that.
We'll do this all over again.
Well, it's sunny in Portland all the time, right?
Sunny
so I'll come here for another sunny day.
That's
Don't
right.
expect this if you come back in October again.
Ashley, you want to send us off?
Hey guys, thank you for tuning in and listening to this conversation we had with Kara Powell. If you are interested in her work, her research, her books, all the things, you can find her on karapowell.com. That's her website. You can see her books, some blog posts that she's done, and a few other podcasts if you want to listen to her in some different settings. You can also look into the Fuller Youth Institute, which is where she works. I think she mentioned that. It's the organization that does all the research that she helps with. And their website is fulleryouthinstitute.org. We'll also have both of those websites in the show notes. So if you didn't get a chance to write them down or you're unsure about spelling, we'll have them there for you. We're so glad you tuned in today. We hope that you join us every Tuesday. And if you want to ensure that you join us every Tuesday, you can make sure that you're subscribed to the B4 podcast on iTunes or Spotify. We have links for that in the show notes as well, just in case you have difficulty finding us on either of those platforms. Don't forget, if you decide to subscribe, you not only get this conversational podcast on Tuesdays, which we hope you enjoy, you also get our weekly liturgy podcast on Thursdays, where you can hear from some different people in our congregation, which is fun, and our weekly teaching on Mondays. We hope to see you guys next week.